Hello and welcome to the Date Night Movie Podcast. I am your host, Patrick Russell, and with me is my co-host, Ashley Russell.
Hey.
This is a show where each week, Ashley and I, we talk about a new movie that's playing in theaters, and then we break it down whether we thought it was good or bad and whether or not it would make for a good date movie. And on this episode, we're going to be talking about Ghostbusters Afterlife. But before we get to that, we have to tell folks about our own film. It's called Tiny Dancers. It's streaming on Prime Video. This is a comedy we made about an exotic dancer who gets arrested for drunk driving. And then for community service, she ends up training a group of kids to compete in a regional dance show. It's kind of like the Mighty Ducks meets Bad Santa with a little twist of Dance Moms.
There you go.
But that's our feature film. It's called Tiny Dancers, and it's streaming right now on Amazon Prime. So let's get into Ghostbusters Afterlife. It's got a 61% on Rotten Tomatoes. This is the fourth entry in a series that began back in 1984. That original film, of course, it starred Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, Harold Ramis, Ernie Hudson as ghost exterminators working in New York City.
Yeah.
Are you a fan of the original Ghostbusters?
I'm not. I mean, it's a little corny. I mean, it's a little misogynistic. I mean, the effects are lame. I mean, it is like puppets.
It was made 40 years ago.
I understand.
So this is before computers.
I get it. But maybe it was a little before its time.
You think the effects are lame?
Yeah.
Like they don't age well.
They do not age well at all.
Okay.
But I do love this, you know, the Marshmallow Man. He's always favorite. He's one of my favorite ghosts.
Yeah, I would argue, like, a lot of the effects do hold up. I mean, that whole sequence with the Stay Puft Man, I mean, a lot of that is miniature work. I think a lot of that holds up pretty well. I mean, you know, certain effect shots, I guess, show their age. But there's a lot of just practical work, you know, kind of like blended into live action photography. You know, I mean, the mid-80s was a weird time for special effects. Computers didn't really start taking over till the 90s.
Well, that and in order to bring, you know, together this god, like the key and the door had to have sex.
We got the key master and the gatekeeper.
And the gatekeeper. And they have to have sex in order to bring, they have to unite. And in order to bring this god, goddess, god, whatever to.
Gozer. Gozer the Gozerian.
Like I said. Corny.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to disagree with, with that take. But no, I mean, this is a movie I grew up with. You know, I watched it on VHS as a kid. I mean, I wore that tape out.
And keep in mind, I never saw this as a kid. I just saw it before you made me watch this movie.
That wasn't the first time
you've
seen it.
That was the first time I've seen it.
A week ago.
Mm. So maybe I would have had a different perspective if I saw it when I was a kid. You know, like I do Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I love that with Shredder and the rat.
You're talking about the first Turtles movie?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's kind of around the same time as Ghostbusters.
I get it, but I never... Ghostbusters was
your
never...
Your mom never handed you like a VHS of Ghostbusters?
No.
Or it was never on TV when you were a kid?
No. I mean, not that I remember.
Okay.
Yeah.
So didn't grow up with Ghostbusters. For me, it's a gratifying movie because it's a part of my childhood. And when I watch it now as an adult, for me, it still holds up. Like, I'm still laughing. You know, I mean, Ghostbusters is a comedy. We agree on that, right?
Yes.
It's a comedy with a couple of scary parts. I think there's some people who debate that, like whether or not it's a comedy. It's definitely a comedy. You have SNL people leading the cast.
I mean,
they're joking. They're quipping.
Good cast.
The score is definitely comedic.
Bill Murray's like raunchy jokes with, you know, the neighbor.
Oh, yeah.
With Susan Sarandon.
You mean Sigourney Weaver?
Sigourney Weaver.
Wow.
See, that's how much I love this movie.
You just watched it.
Exactly.
So, okay. So then there was a direct sequel in 1989 with the same cast and crew as the original. I'm assuming you haven't seen that sequel.
I did not see that. What do you think about that one?
I remember seeing it in theaters as a little kid.
Yeah.
Loving it. That movie does not hold up. Yeah, the sequel is just kind of a retread with less jokes, more special effects.
Yeah.
So it becomes more of a special effects movie. It's just not as funny or as fresh as the first. It doesn't hold up.
I will say I'm glad I watched it before going into the movie that we just saw in theaters.
I kind of insisted. I'm like, you haven't seen it in a while. Like, well, you need to watch
It's kind of like continual. Like, it's a continuum. It continues the story.
Yeah, this new movie is...
I would have been so lost if I didn't see the original first. The
new movie is very much kind of like a direct follow-up to the first.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, we should also touch on, you know, in 2016, there was an all-female reboot.
Yeah.
Which was not well-received. I know you and I, we saw it in theaters. Yeah. I think we went with an open mind.
We did.
My memory is that we were underwhelmed.
Yeah, I mean, okay, so...
You've got some funny ladies in there.
You have some funny ladies, but they did not go with the storyline. Like, Gozier, like, it was not the same...
Well, they're doing something original.
They're doing something original.
I guess, like, within a reboot. But yeah, it's a new villain, new ghost.
It would have been kind of cool maybe seeing one of the, you know...
You would have preferred if they went the Gozer route.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Or like the in-between of the all-male, like the 19, the 94 movie.
Yeah, 84.
84 movie, and then to now. Like, there's stuff in between. Like, maybe Aykroyd and Bill Murray, like, they're the ones that trained and, you know...
You mean like have
recruited
them
recruited another Ghostbusters?
Have them reprise their original characters? You mean instead of doing cameos where they're playing unrelated people?
So exactly.
Yeah.
So
I don't know what that was.
I would have preferred like maybe Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray, like they wanted to recruit another set of Ghostbusters so they can retire.
Right.
You know, and have them be a part of that.
I think for a long time, I mean, Sony has been trying to make a Ghostbusters 3. I mean, ever since part 2. I mean, all through the 90s. I mean, various cast members kind of were supposedly attached and unattached. I think at one point, you know, there was a version with like Adam Sandler and Chris Farley, like those guys. And yeah, I think the idea always was like get the, you know, legacy characters back for like supporting roles. And they're kind of like mentoring a new group of Ghostbusters.
Exactly.
So I think the problem was Bill Murray. Like, he was always holding out. Like, the script was always not good enough.
Don't bring him back. There were other Dan Aykroyd, and there was the other guy.
I mean, you could argue, like, Bill Murray is, like, the core success of that first Ghostbusters.
I mean, I get it.
Without Bill Murray, like...
Is it? Because he looked pretty old in the movie.
Yeah. I mean, he's been around. Ernie Hudson's looking sharp.
But I mean, that's the only thing that I will say is like they could have brought back, I mean, just even Dan Aykroyd. And
they brought them back in that female Ghostbusters.
Yeah, but not
they were playing unrelated cameos. Yeah, it was dumb. Yeah, I mean, I don't hate that movie. It feels, you know, ill-conceived and it's just not as funny.
It was just interesting that the roles were reversed, you know.
There are things that work about it. I mean, I've rewatched it. It has its moments and the girls have chemistry. There are things that work.
I think the girls tried too hard to be funny. And that was my issue with it.
Like Kate McKinnon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, she just tried.
It's like, a love it or hate it kind of performance. Yeah, she's...
it's just so forced in comedy.
It's a little,
instead of it being natural.
To me, it reads a little forced. Other people love her shtick. But yeah, that movie was not successful enough to breed more down that line.
No, it was not.
So that's why we're here today with another reboot, Ghostbusters Afterlife. Okay, and so on this latest film, it's directed by Jason Reitman, who is the son of Ivan Reitman. Ivan Reitman, of course, big director in the 80s with movies like Stripes and the Ghostbusters movies and Twins.
Oh, so the son is... Oh, that's kind of cool.
Is it?
Is the dad died? Has he passed away?
He's a producer on this film. I'm sure he had a heavy hand.
Oh, yeah. Big time heavy hand.
Yeah, and yeah. There's definitely a heavy hand, you know, on this film.
This is nepotism.
Which is weird because you never see that in Hollywood.
Oh, no, never.
They're always giving out opportunities for hungry talent, right?
I mean, it's like, okay, that's a completely different, we're off topic, and that is a different...
It's a strange
issue.
It's a strange thing, but I want to talk about Jason Reitman.
It's cool in the sense that, you know, you can always say son and the dad shared this, you know, from a family perspective.
Yeah, I'll say this about Jason Reitman. he's made a name for himself, kind of independent of his dad, with movies like Thank You for Smoking, Juno, Up in the Air, Young Adult.
Oh.
Those are all like pretty solid.
Those are all great movies.
Yeah. Original, kind of mid-range adult movies. I mean, he's made some turkey since then. Tully.
Ugh.
But for a while, he seemed like the type of filmmaker who would avoid franchise type movies. You know, like those types of movies I just mentioned, like that's a totally like original kind of lower budgeted route.
He probably only did this because of his pops.
Well, I mean, like I've said, like Sony's desperate to get Ghostbusters back on the ground. So yeah, there's a lot of spoilers in this movie. Most of them are in the final act. We'll try and keep things kind of free of spoilers, but we're going to reveal some things. So if you haven't seen it and you want to go in completely pure, come back after you've seen the film. And so this movie kind of opens with a prologue where we got Egon Spengler. He's trying to trap a ghost on his farm near the Shandor Mining Company.
Yep.
And for any hardcore Ghostbusters nerds, the name Shandor should ring a bell. From the first film, we learned in that movie that Ivo Shandor was the architect who built the skyscraper where Sigourney Weaver got possessed. And he also became a cult leader, I think.
Yeah.
And in this prologue, you know, Egon's trying to trap this ghost, and he succeeds. And then he kind of hides it under a floorboard. And then another ghost kills him, gives him a heart attack, I think. Is that what happens? Well, it's a little unclear what's going on in this prologue.
That is kind of the gist of it. The ghost goes into
It's not even clear that it's Egon.
Pinning him down on the chair. And then something happens and he dies.
Pulls up through the chair.
Yeah.
Similar like the first one.
Yeah. And it made it look like he had a heart attack from, you know.
The ghost.
Yeah.
The ghost killed him, but made it look like a heart attack.
Yeah.
So, it's not even clear that that's Egon. I think the movie, like in that scene, it doesn't make it clear, but that is Egon Spengler.
It is, yes.
Then this movie kind of shifts focus to Egon's daughter, played by Carrie Coon, and her kids, Trevor and Phoebe, played by Finn Wolfhard and Grace McKenna. And it's kind of played as a reveal that they're even related to Egon. But it's pretty clear that, I mean, with the daughter's hair and her glasses, it's pretty clear that, like, Egon is their granddad, these kids' granddad. And since he's died, they've inherited his kind of decrepit farmhouse.
Yes.
In the middle of Oklahoma.
In the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
It really is like one of those small towns that, you know.
And their house is totally just out in the middle of the boonies.
Yeah.
It's kind of nice. I mean, like for a solid hour, the movie is just them kind of getting acclimated to their surroundings.
Yeah.
We meet the kids' teacher, Gary Gruberson, who's played by Paul Rudd. Trevor has a crush on one of the girls at school named Lucky. And we meet a kid named Podcast.
Podcast was a good character.
All these kids, they eventually become our new Ghostbusters.
Yes.
Is the deal. But it takes a while getting there.
That is one of the things that I will say, like, okay, speed up a little bit in the beginning and kind of cut certain,
it feels like there's,
certain things.
There's definitely some stretches that could be tightened up. But yeah, the movie kind of slowly builds out a mystery for these kids to solve because the town gets like regular earthquakes despite not being on any existing fault lines.
Yeah.
So that's kind of a mystery that unfolds. And, you know, honestly, going much further then that would probably go into spoiler territory. I mean, there's a ton of spoilers for this movie, whole lot of fan service. But overall, you really liked it.
I did. And this is so surprising. My expectations for this movie was really low. I didn't even really want to go see it, to be honest.
You don't even
with
like
you.
The first movie.
No.
So are you tempted to maybe give it another rewatch?
No, I'm good. But this movie, I really liked the main character, the girl.
The girl.
I thought the mom was a little, like...
Carrie Coon.
I mean, I get that, you know...
At the top of the film, they're getting evicted.
Yeah, I
they're
mean...
They're getting kicked out of their home.
I get that she's got daddy issues, but come on, not telling your kids, especially your daughter, who is very much like your dad, and not telling your kids where they come from, like, it just doesn't make sense to me.
She's got a lot of bitterness with her dad. I guess her dad, Egon, just abandoned her.
Yeah.
But the dude is fighting ghosts, right? Like
he's saving the world.
He can sense the apocalypse.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why don't we take a quick break? When we come back, we'll get into spoilers for Ghostbusters Afterlife. All right, we're back, and we're going to get into spoilers for Ghostbusters Afterlife. And so, yeah, we find out that these earthquakes, they're coming from a trap that Egon has set inside the Shandor mine. And basically, it's like the undead rising from a gateway under the earth.
Yeah, so somebody's trying to raise up
all these
Gosar.
All these spirits.
All these spirits at once. It's like an apocalypse. And so
he set up these proton blasters to zap them back down.
He stole all the proton blasters from all the other Ghostbusters.
He stole the gear from the other Ghostbusters. So there's bitterness from the other Ghostbusters.
All of the traps were gone. Like he stole everything. And he went to this little town in Oklahoma and knew what was going to happen, knew what year it was going to happen. And he set up everything.
How did he know all that?
The year was on the wall.
I think I remember this. Yeah. And so, yeah, he sets up this trap. And that's the sound of the earthquakes. Like when the spirits are getting blasted by the proton blasters, that's what's creating the earthquake effect. And yeah, and I guess later on, there's a scene where Paul Rudd, he gets...
Let's introduce Paul Rudd. So Paul Rudd...
Gary Gruberson.
Yeah. Gary Gruberson. Oh, my God. So he is one of the teachers at the school for the kids, and he is a seismologist. So he is there measuring the earthquakes, not understanding what the earthquakes are.
And he forms a bond with Phoebe, right?
Yeah, because...
They're both science-minded.
They're both science-minded. I guess apparently it's a small school. Nobody really cares. And so he puts on movies. Remember he puts on
slasher movies to entertain the kids, which is hilarious. That's a good kind of runner. You know, one of them is definitely Chucky. I forget what the other one was.
And then the girl goes, Phoebe, she goes back into his office and looks at the charts. And Paul Rudd realizes how smart she is. And then not to mention, I think him and the mom had a connection.
They get a little spark going. And there's also a plot thread where it's clear that there's like a ghost in the farmhouse. And that turns out to be Egon kind of like guiding them in the direction.
Yes.
Which is a nice little thread. I like that. You know, keeping him invisible is fine. And so, yeah, there's a scene at Walmart where, like, Paul Rudd gets possessed.
Well, this is probably...
It's a totally empty Walmart somehow.
This is probably one of my favorite scenes because they have the mini Garshmallow Man. Like, that was just awesome.
Yeah, it reminded me of something out of, like, Gremlins. Yeah. When they're, like biting him and, like, jumping around on the floor.
And then, like, they're making s'mores out of each other.
It's kind of a fun scene. And then, like, he runs out and he gets possessed by Zool, the dog.
Yeah.
It's not really clear. They don't even make it clear from the first one. Like, how are these dogs possessing people? Because, like, in the first movie, you see, like, Rick Moranis. He's up against the wall in the restaurant.
They get eaten.
But like, they're still human form. Like, they're possessed.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they...
Like, the dogs... consume them and then takes their form.
Yeah.
You think that's it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably right. So yeah, that scene happens. And so Paul Rudd, he ends up possessed. And so we're kind of going like fast towards the climax here. And Carrie Coon also gets possessed.
Yeah, the mama.
So they basically become the Sigourney Weaver and Rick Moranis of this climax.
Where was Rick Moranis in this movie?
The man is retired.
I understand.
As far as I know. It's okay for actors to retire.
It is.
Sometimes it's sad. I want to keep seeing them. I want to keep seeing Gene Hackman. So yeah, so Carrie Coon, Paul Rudd, they're possessed. And this kind of leads to the return of Gozer.
Yep.
Gozer's back. And
from outer space.
She's played by Olivia Wilde.
I thought that was good.
That's not bad casting.
It's not bad casting.
That's not bad. And so, yeah, like... The climax kind of leads to, like, this whole standoff happens in front of their farmhouse, and Gozer's there, and, you know, we got the two dogs. So we have that going on, and the kids are, like, you know, going up against the Ghostbusters. They're getting their ass kicked.
Obviously, there's a lot of shenanigans that happen between them and there. So, like, you know, we're just getting to, like, the nitty-gritty.
Yeah, and we kind of ignored the whole section with Muncher.
I know, Muncher's
like, the first
cute.
Ghostbusting scene. That might be, like, my favorite scene. Might be that because, like... Muncher is the only original ghost, and he's not that original. He's just like a variation of Slimer.
Yeah.
But like Muncher is the only like new thing in this movie. And there's like, yeah, like a whole sequence where they're chasing him around town.
And all and they're like learning all the equipment. All he wants to do is munch. He's not bothering anybody.
I like new stuff. That's one thing I'll give the credit to the female Ghostbusters. They put new ghosts in there. I mean, the villains weren't great, but it was new stuff. It was new visuals.
You mean Thor wasn't a good villain? Chris Hemsworth?
But it wasn't even him. It was like some like janitor type who gets possessed.
Yeah.
It was, I mean, not great, not great, but I enjoy, like putting new things in, you know, like, I mean, we've already done the whole Gozer, the Gozerian climax, but here we are doing it again. And so the original Ghostbusters show up, all the living Ghostbusters show up, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, they're all there. They're in their suits. They got the proton packs. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fan service, but I'm into it. I like seeing the original guys. And they start helping the kids out. And then we get a CGI ghost of Harold Ramis.
Yeah. Who passed away, RIP.
Of course. I mean, the man's a legend.
In real life. What year did he pass?
2014, I believe.
2014.
The man is a legend. Yeah. I mean, he wrote the first two Ghostbusters. So he, along with Dan Aykroyd, they created this whole concept. Just a legendary comedic talent. I mean, directed Groundhog Day. I mean, Harold Ramis is the man. I don't need a computer bringing back his corpse.
it really...
For an emotional climax. I don't need that.
Yeah, I mean...
That was nuts. I'm like, am I seeing this?
He could have just been... I mean, he could have just shown up and then just like been like his...
Just imply that his spirit's there. That's what you're doing in those other scenes. Or I thought that was kind of a nice touch. Like the spirit of Harold Ramis is kind of guiding these characters.
Or just like cut and then just have like the scene where his spirit goes up into the sky. You know, and so we know that his, you know, final business is done, is complete. We have that emotional thing where the mom saw the pictures in his secret lab. So she knew that she was always on his mind. And
prior to this moment, the movie's laying it on pretty thick with the Harold Ramis stuff, but it's okay. Once they visualize him, like full figure, standing next to these characters,
I know.
It's too much. Like that is, I don't know if that was, must have been Ivan Reitman.
It's kind of like the Star Wars movie that brought back another dead actor that was in the original. And it just wasn't.
It's always
CG,
weird.
It's weird.
It's weird. I mean, that was doing it, I guess, for like a plot reason. Yeah. This is doing it strictly for
tugging on those
to tug the emotions, to like manipulate you. And it was really just way too much. The whole movie is dedicated to Harold Ramis. The whole movie feels like a tribute to Harold Ramis. Yeah. And that's great. And so, that happens. And they defeat Gozer.
So Egon was building like the traps and everything in his house was a big old trap for Gozer. And so that's how they ended up trapping Gozer was in all of the different traps in his yard.
He had set traps like out in the cornfield.
Yeah.
And I guess it just needed like the power of all those traps pulling at the same time.
Yeah.
Is that the idea?
Yeah. Because it is a god of death or like Hades pretty much.
I'm not crazy about the idea of like completely just redoing the climax of the original. Because it really is like the exact same climax. You got Gozer. You got the minions. You got the Ghostbusters. It's the same climax. I mean, in the original, we're on like a Manhattan skyscraper. And this one, we're just in front of a farmhouse. That's kind of a trade down in my book. But I guess what I would have preferred, like if we're going to go down that route, like we're bringing back Gozer, we're bringing back the dogs. I mean, have that lead to like another big bad. Like don't have Gozer be the big bad. That's just a redo. We've already been down that road. We've already unleashed Gozer. We've squared off. That's my personal take.
I get what you're saying, but
I would have preferred something
Gozer
new.
Gozer comes back. It tries to come back every like 20, 30 years. And so, I mean, that's
according
just,
to this movie.
According to this movie, yeah.
All I'm saying is like, I mean, I can roll with the fan service of bringing back Gozer and the dogs, having characters get possessed by the dogs. We're going down that route again, but have it lead somewhere ultimately new. And this movie doesn't. It leads right into the past.
Yeah.
for me, that was an issue. Although having the original Ghostbusters back in their suits and their characters, that was a nostalgic thrill for sure. Like, that will always be a nostalgic thrill.
Like, there was so many people that were clapping.
So yeah, I guess I have a lot of mixed feelings towards that climax, and I guess towards the movie in general. I mean, it's kind of like a cynical mashup of like an Amblin kids adventure, like Spielbergian 80s kids adventure, mashed up against Ghostbusters movie. And what makes it ultimately work, I think, are the characters.
The characters are great.
I mean, good characters will pull you through. Personally, I would have preferred just like an original big budget kids adventure movie.
Yeah.
Like a Super 8 or something. Like, leave Ghostbusters out of it. Just give me like a kids adventure. You're like, no.
No.
I'm nitpicking. I don't love, I guess, the change in genre, because this is a series that started out as a comedy, even the all-female version.
It was an adult comedy, and then this is more like a kid's.
This is a drama.
Like PG-13.
This is way more dramatic.
It is way more dramatic. There's not much
comedy. Even Paul Rudd isn't that funny. But the tone is much more serious. And that's, I associate Ghostbusters with like wisecracking dudes or women.
I mean, I guess that's why they brought in podcasts.
For the humor?
It was cute. And then like one of the best parts of the movie was he's got his podcast and he's got like one follower. And it turns out to be Dan Aykroyd being his follower.
That character, so, podcast was a fun character. Yeah. I mean, give him a real name, I guess. Don't call him podcast.
But he's podcasting all the time. Like,
so let's just call him podcast.
That's his nick. That's what he wanted to be called.
That's what he calls himself.
Yeah.
It's so dumb.
Anyway, so what how would you rate this movie?
I would probably give it a B-.
I would give it an A-.
Sure.
Yeah. Would you consider this a good date movie?
It's not bad for a date.
I actually wouldn't consider this a good, I mean, I'm actually neutral on this because it is more of a kids movie. It's not a date movie per se. It's not for, I don't know. It's good
But the tone is serious. Like there's scary moments. There's humorous moments.
There is a little love story with the son and Ghostbuster.
I think it's okay for a date. I mean, probably not for like 2 50-year-olds on a date.
But yeah.
I mean, maybe like, 30 and under on a date.
Yeah.
25 and under. I don't know. But no, I mean, nostalgia. Yeah, that's certainly a part of it. Yeah, I feel like this movie will play pretty broadly.
I do too.
Yeah, I mean, this is what fans wanted. They didn't want the Paul Feig version. Although, I mean, I guess I prefer this over the female Ghostbusters. Yeah,
I definitely did.
Right. Yeah, I'm still working on my feelings on this because there's a lot of fan service. Like, short of dressing up as a Ghostbuster. Like, I'm a pretty big fan of Ghostbusters. And so, like, some of the fan service definitely worked for me. Some of it felt like overkill. I really want studios to make original movies. So I have, like, a hard time really endorsing this. But the characters kind of worked for me. And a lot of the story.
It works.
Kind of worked for me.
And I'll tell you,
so like, it's a soft recommend.
A lot of my Facebook folks who've seen this movie already, they love it.
Like I said, I think it will play well. So yeah, that's Ghostbusters Afterlife, directed by Jason Reitman. You can find more episodes at anchor.fm/moviedatenight, as well as on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, where you can rate and review. Don't forget to check out our feature film, Tiny Dancers, which is streaming right now on Prime Video. We're on Twitter at DN Movie Podcast, and you can also email us at datenightmoviepodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, I'm Patrick.
I'm Ashley.
Thanks for listening.
Bye. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Don't get caught alone, no, no. Ghostbusters! When it comes through your door, unless you just want some more, I think you better call.